All right, hello everybody. Welcome to the Way of the Truth Warrior. Been here daily, sometimes twice a day, covering what is happening in the world from at least my perspective. And I also try to bring on some empowering and informed guests to give you their perspective. And today is going to be no different. I have with me a returning guest, Mr. Alex Newman, who's an award-winning international journalist. He's an educator, author, and consultant. Alex has written for a wide array of publications in the United States and abroad. He currently serves as a contributor to the Epoch Times, WND, which is WorldNet Daily, Freedom Project Media, The New American Magazine, The Law Enforcement Intelligence Brief, and more. Alex has co-authored and authored several books and serves as a director for multiple organizations in the fight for faith, family, and freedom. Alex has worked on a wide array of campaigns, ranging from political campaigns for Congress to marketing campaigns for nonprofit groups and international businesses. Alex has lived in 8 countries on 4 continents and speaks multiple languages fluently and more at varying degrees of proficiency. His work has been cited by governments and major media outlets around the world. Alex is a frequent guest on national and international radio and TV shows and Kick-Ass podcast, by the way, and has also been on many of America's most popular shows. He's also a frequent speaker on TV programs and at conferences, altogether reaching tens of millions of people with the message of faith, family, and freedom. He's a father, he's a journalist, and this is his second time here on Truth Warrior. The last time we actually got censored by the CBC for our conversation about the United Nations, and so we're really hoping to get censored by the CBC again today. And there he is. Let me just make sure he's unmuted. Alex, thank you so much, brother, for joining me for another round two against the globalists here on Truth Warrior. Welcome, brother.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be with you, and really appreciate the opportunity. And the fact that CBC thought enough of us to come after us and try to censor the last video tells me that we were on the right track. So great to be with you, brother. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we've definitely been pissing off the right people, and that's a good sign. And that's really what's happening right now. Have you noticed this? Obviously, the censorship. We had some. There's a huge battle happening right now with the new documentary Plandemic, and it's. I can't remember the name of the doctor. Dr. Judy Mikovits.
Mikovits,
yeah. And she's finally coming out and sharing her tales, her story. She's one of the most well accomplished scientists in her league, and yet she's being muzzled and censored for her opinion, as are many experts that are speaking out against any form of the mainstream media narrative about what's happening. Have you yourself experienced this, and or have you been following all the censorship that's been going on for anybody, journalists, doctors, politicians, anybody that's mentioning anything that goes outside of the WHO?
Yes, and in fact, you know, I'm sure you and a lot of other people have already seen the video on the CNN, the fakest of all the fake news networks, the CEO of YouTube. I forget her name, Susan Wickoj, you know, some Polish last name. And she said, oh, we're going to take down anything that goes against World Health Organization guidelines. It's going to be a violation of our community standards. So that tells you everything you need to know right there. The World Health Organization is a disgrace. It's run by an actual communist terrorist, a guy who served on the Politburo of a mass murdering communist ethno-Marxist terror group called the Tigray People's Liberation Front in Ethiopia. Served as the right-hand man for a mass-murdering dictator, helped in an effort to reduce the population, and actually meets many of the criteria to be defined as a genocide of the Amhara people in Ethiopia. The U.S. government thought so little about this terror organization he was involved in that it officially designated it as a terrorist group. And of course, he took over from an actual agent of the Communist Chinese Party. So the idea that these lunatics get to decide what we can and can't see, I think tells us everything we need to know about how backwards things have gotten. So we've covered this very extensively at The New American and at thenewamerican.com. We're being censored like crazy. We did a whole special issue on the coronavirus, but we've got to get this information out. And it's exciting that people are waking up, David.
It is. It is. And I do feel like that's what's happening. The public is pushing back. The platforms such as myself, I have to be upfront with everybody. My channel has exploded. The views have exploded. People are sharing it more than ever. I'm sure people are coming to your site more than ever. Other people that I speak to in this field, journalists, podcasters, radio show hosts, everything is going up. We see them attacking platforms like London Real when they're having any of these doctors or researchers or thinkers that are coming on to, again, share other perspectives. perspectives. And Alex, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought we were supposed to be living in a free society where you have the right to think your own thoughts, do your own research, come to your own conclusions, share your opinion as long as it's not inciting violence or whatever, and that you are able to exercise free speech. Isn't that supposed to be what we're allowed to do? I don't know.
That is supposed to be what it is, right? And in fact, in the United States, that's actually protected right in our Constitution, our very first amendment. The first time we amended our Constitution, it was to protect, it was already protected before, but they thought, let's just throw in an extra protection just to be really clear and make sure nobody ever tries to misunderstand this. The right to freedom of speech, the right to freedom of the press, the right to peaceably assemble, right? All these rights are fundamental. In fact, our system of government is very clear. These are God-given rights, right? That God gave us these rights. That's what our founding fathers said. They said it was a self-evident truth that God gave us these rights. And if God gave us these rights, then of course, government has no right to take them away. But what we see now is you have at least some segment of the population. It's hard to know exactly how big it is. I mean, if you do just kind of anecdotal surveys and just walk around in your community, you'll see that almost nobody believes the garbage anymore. But if you watch TV, you would think everybody believes the garbage.
Right.
But what's happening here is people are waking up in huge numbers, no matter how much they try to rig the game with the, you know, shadow banning and trying to promote CNN and MSNBC on YouTube. You know, when they banned Alex Jones, I crunched the numbers for a cover story in The New American. I found out that Alex Jones's election coverage in the run-up to 2016 election had more views than all of the big boys combined. CNN, MSNBC, NBC, ABC, Washington Compost, New York Times, more than all of their channels combined. And that was with the shadow bans. That was with YouTube trying to promote the garbage. So people are waking up to this. But, you know, there is some segment of the population that apparently, you know, I just posted something on Twitter and I got some feedback like, hey, you know, YouTube should censor. I guess some people are okay with the lunatic deep staters in Silicon Valley doing their thinking for them. But I think that fringe minority is getting smaller and smaller by the moment. And all it takes is one lie. You know, people watch CNN and they see something that's fake and they know it's fake and CNN is talking about it. It just takes that one thing. And then suddenly people kind of unplug and they're like, whoa, they just lied to me. Like, what else are they lying about? And then you start asking more and more questions, and then you find a podcast like this one and, you know, The New American, you start digging, and you're like, whoa, they've been lying about everything. And that's happening all over the world at a tremendous pace, David.
It absolutely is. And by the way, I just must say, your beard is coming in really nice. Mine's doing pretty good. We've both been missing the haircuts, but I think we're just going to go full caveman by the end of this. That's okay. But anyways, you're so right. And I've been having many different guests on to share different perspectives. And I'm thinking, who can I get to come on here and reinforce the information that I released about covering some of these guys like Antonio Gutierrez, who's the chief of the UN, who came out and told the world, don't worry about it. The vaccine is trust. You know, it's just a symbol of trust. Just go along with it. We need to unite the world. We need to build, what's the word he used? We need to build a more equitable, equal, climate respecting world. And I'm like, well, those are all issues that we were already kind of debating, and now he's bringing it into this discussion about what we need to do about this pandemic scenario. What can you tell us? Let's start with the UN, where we left off in our last discussion. The United Nations, the World Health Organizations, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the Rockefeller Institute, these are all organizations that are nice and cozy together, aren't they?
Absolutely. In fact, it's just one giant incestuous family, and it's basically them against free humanity. I mean, it's you know, they're in one camp and we're in the other. And it's funny. Just this morning, I released an article about how the green globalists, how the deep state is trying to exploit this coronavirus to advance their silly climate change agenda. And it's actually funny because they're right in one way, right? You have all these losers, you know, the head of the UN, Antonio Guterres, who used to run Socialist International, a collection of socialist, communist, mass murdering, Marxist political parties, the largest in the world.
And people
said, hey, we're gonna rebuild the economies and the societies that we just burned down, but we're going to do it on a more sustainable basis. It's going to be more climate friendly. You know, they actually got a lot of their goals passed, but they keep saying that there's parallels between the fight against coronavirus and the fight against global warming. And they're right, but not in the way that they want you to think, right? One of the most obvious ways that they're right is the models, right? Their stupid climate models told us that we were supposed to see runaway warming, the glaciers were going to be melting, we were all going to be dying from heat. And even with their manipulated data, it shows that we haven't had any really global warming for 25 years now, okay? So it was a fraud. Their models were completely wrong. The UN relied on 73 supercomputer models. Every single one predicted drastically more warming than we've had. Literally, a monkey in a cage with some dice would have better odds of predicting future temperatures than the UN's models. And if you think that's a coincidence, if you think they're just a bunch of morons running these things, I've got a nice bridge and some nice beachfront property in Nebraska. We'll talk later. But the coronavirus models were exactly the same, David. You know, this Imperial College in London, this lunatic doctor who just got caught sneaking out during the lockdown to go have sex with, you know, one of his paramours. Wow. When everybody else was supposed to be locked down, right? He had to resign his post. But he came from Imperial College London. And they're the ones who came, of course, it's funded by Bill Gates, naturally. And they're the ones who came out with these models that said 2 million people in the UK were going to die. And then like, okay, yeah, that was when they shut everything down. Oh, 2 million people are going to die. And they said, okay, actually, it's only going to be like 50,000. Okay, that's a pretty big difference. And they said, no, actually, we were wrong again. It's only going to be like 5,000. And actually, 3,500 of those probably would have died from something else anyways this year. And so we've shut down the entire economy of the United Kingdom to supposedly stop 1,000-something deaths. And now the governor of New York tells us that the people who are getting coronavirus are the people locked at home. So their models are completely fraudulent. They were designed not to tell us what would happen, but to spark fear and terror in the hearts of gullible people who still watch CNN and NBC and CBC and other fake news channels. And they worked for a time, but now the chickens are coming home to roost. They're all being exposed as frauds, as quacks. They burned down our economy for nothing, and we cannot let them get away with rebuilding what they destroyed in their own image.
Now, Alex, some people may have trouble with this where they're trying to figure out why. Why would they do this? Is it just that they're, like you said, are they just stupid? Do they not know? Why do they keep making the same mistakes? Why do we keep seeing the same trends? Are these people just grossly incompetent? Or is there something more going on here?
Yeah, and it really boils down to those two options. Are they stupid and incompetent, or is there something else going on? Are they evil, power-hungry, money-grubbing freaks? And you know, when you look at these two options and you look at the evidence, there should be no question at all. These are not stupid people. In fact, we do have to give them credit where credit is due. They are incredibly smart, right? Mm. They managed to manipulate a significant portion of humanity, of 7 billion people, into believing that we were all going to die from global warming, that we were all going to die from coronavirus, and conveniently the solution to every problem they manufacture is always give up all your money, give up all your freedom, and let us control your life. Always. No matter what the problem, that's always the solution. So I think it's very clear, David, we're not dealing with stupid people. We're not dealing with incompetent people. In fact, we're dealing with geniuses, diabolical geniuses. Their agenda, quite simply, is to enslave us. I mean, it's just the only way to put it. You want to sound respectable. So, oh, they just want to take away our... No, they want to enslave us, and we need to be honest. They want to create a totalitarian global technocracy with them in charge and those of us who survive. I mean, if you notice, if you listen to these people, they will tell you to your face, there's way too many people on the planet. We think there should be less of you. Henry Kissinger, when he was National Security Advisor, put together the National Security Memorandum 200. You can go read it online today. Way too many people in the world. We need to depopulate the third world. Bill Gates will tell you over and over again, there's way too many people in the world. We're going to reduce the population using vaccines and abortions. You can go watch the videos yourself. I just put out a big video about Bill Gates on my show, Behind the Deep State, which you can find on YouTube for now, at least. So these people are not stupid. They're very smart and they're very, very evil.
And again, we've gone through this in other shows, but the idea is to look at history. So for those of people who are still not convinced, you have to look at the track record of history, and you have to have something called pattern recognition. And it's something that human beings have been given as a gift. It comes with the package. So you should turn it on and use it. And what that is what every good journalist has is the ability to recognize patterns. And not that you're trying to create patterns where there aren't any. You don't have to do that with this. This is something where if you keep following A, the money, that's always a great place to find a bunch of coincidences, right? B, you follow the track record of all the people and the careers of all the people and how they go back and forth between media, big pharmaceutical companies, the military industrial complex, government positions, big councils, and all these, and you just see that swing door policy that happens. As you were saying in the previous episode that got us censored by CBC, is that the history of the United Nations, which was founded by the Rockefeller family and many other interesting characters, has not this glowing history that everybody wants it to have. And so maybe we could just say a little bit, just to recap for people that didn't see our previous interview, about the United Nations and how that eventually grew and the World Health Organization, sort of the history of how that all came to be.
Yeah, so very simply, I mean, they tried after World War I to set up the nucleus of a world government. They called it the League of Nations. And our US Senate very wisely said, no, absolutely, positively not. We're going to keep our sovereignty and we're going to keep our self-government. Thank you. So they came back after World War II, after they had destroyed much of the planet and killed millions of people. And they said, hey, let's try this again. We'll create the United Nations. Now, there should be no doubt that this was actually established to create the nucleus for a future totalitarian world government. How do we know? Well, on one side of the table, you had Joseph Stalin, one of the worst mass murderers in human history, one of the victors of World War II, thanks to massive amounts of American assistance. We built him factories. We sent him warplanes. We built him factories to build warplanes and tanks, right? So on one side, you had Joseph Stalin, and then the United States, the other superpower, came with a guy called Alger Hiss. Now, he had been running the Carnegie Foundation, one of the big international foundations that worked very closely with the Rockefeller Foundation on hijacking education. Well, Alger Hiss went from these foundations over to the State Department, and from there, he became the first Secretary General of the United Nations, and he became the chairman of the conference that wrote the UN Charter. And then a few years later, we put him in prison because we found out he was working for Joseph Stalin as a spy, as a paid agent. And so you have totalitarians who created the UN, even people who we never proved were actually agents of a mass murdering, hostile foreign dictatorship, admitted what was going on. People like John Foster Dulles, who was Secretary of State during this time, wrote a book called War or Peace. And if you read this book, he tells you right in there that this UN was supposed to serve as the nucleus of a future world government. He said the world government could operate perfectly under the existing UN charter that they had secured. It would be able to use military force to enforce compliance and all the other things. So the UN was started out at the beginning as a tool to try to undermine the sovereignty of the nation states of the world and the people groups of the world, to try to bring us all together into this global system. And now we're seeing the end game coming into view, where you have the World Health Organization working with Bill Gates, working with totalitarian governments, planning a global mass forced vaccination campaign, planning to have the World Health Organization become like the new global Ministry of Health, and all these different agencies, right? So it's a very nefarious agenda we're dealing with.
Well, it's becoming more and more clear. And, you know, they had me at Murder Hornets. Did you hear about this shit? The Murder Hornets
Yeah,
that are
I
coming
did.
to
The
destroy the
Murder
world
Hornet.
now. They're like, stay inside. Oh, you're not going to stay inside? Murder Hornets.
Oh, you sound just like CNN, man. Oh, my goodness. That's
Someone sent me a meme. The next one is, was it shark pigeons? It's like pigeons with shark heads.
brilliant. Oh, my God. And Sharknadoes. Oh,
Yeah.
man, we're all doomed unless we give up all our money and freedom, right? It's always the
Right.
same thing. Give us your money and freedom, and we'll protect you from the scary boogeyman that we have concocted for your amusement and terrification.
Terrification, I like it. And that seems
A
to be
new
the
word.
pitch. And that's what, so this is always how I try to talk to people that may still be struggling with this, as I say, okay, because when we did the show and we were talking about climate change and we talk about that, they're like, well, what, you don't want to help the earth? I mean, I have this beautiful nature pic in the background. Why would you want to destroy the planet? And it's like, well, their solution to any planetary problem with pollution or whatever is not the favorite solution that I've found. That's not the solution I want to go with. I want a solution to the problems we see, but that's not the one I want. I don't want Aldous Huxley's Brave New World combined with Orwell's 1984 to be the solution to this problem. And then the same thing with this virus, as you mentioned, the same computer models, they were wrong again. And that's the other thing, is I'm like, do you feel good trusting known liars and criminals for your information? And so then I did a show and I just went, there was a great article where they summarized 12 of the top experts in the world. So these are European experts. They're top of their field. Some of them work at Stanford and all these places. And they were all the rebels now. They've all been like blacklisted because they started speaking out against what the World Health Organization was saying. And they weren't just speaking against it, Alex. They were like, we have to stop this madness. This is going to cause so many more problems. If people want to save the elderly and the immunocompromised, this is not the way to go. This is going to make things worse. It's going to plummet the economy. It's going to, you know, this is the problem we're having, is this, there's a disconnect with people that are watching the news and people such as ourselves who are looking at what the actual experts are saying. Have you noticed this?
Absolutely, I have. And you brought up another very interesting parallel between the so-called environmental fight to save the environment and this coronavirus pandemic. In both cases, the ostensible solutions that are being peddled will do the exact opposite of what they claim. So take the environment question, for example. The UN is telling us that if we adopt an economic system along the lines of what the Soviet Union had, along the lines of what China has, along the lines of what North Korea has, where basically the government is in charge of everything. And I mean, all you have to do is read their own documents, and they'll tell you the Agenda 2030, right? Talking about global wealth redistribution, government control over everything, universal health care so that the government will run your health care system. The government should run everything. And, we know that this doesn't work. If you look at the environments of the different nations of the world, what you see is that the freest nations are also the cleanest from an environmental perspective. And this is true over and over and over again, right? What are some of the cleanest environments in the entire world? New Zealand, Australia, the United States of America, Canada, Switzerland, Japan, right? These are the countries that have pristine environments. These are the countries where the rivers are clean, where the lakes are clean, where the oceans are clean, where the forest is clean. I mean, these are the nations that really should be the model from an environmental perspective. And they all have something in common. Very, very free markets relative to the rest of the world. And I know some of those countries have, government healthcare systems and big government. But when you compare it to the more totalitarian models of China, of the Soviet Union, of North Korea, of Vietnam, of Uzbekistan, where the environment is basically a giant toxic wasteland, you see that, and even if you use the Index of Economic Freedom from the Heritage Foundation, you see that the countries with the most economic freedom, the freest markets, the most individual freedom are the countries that I just mentioned that have the best environments. The countries with the least amount of economic freedom, Zimbabwe, North Korea, Venezuela, these are the countries where the environment is a giant, stinking, rotting piece of garbage. And that's what happens, right? Economic freedom produces prosperity. Prosperous people can afford to care about the environment. They can afford to not want to dump pollution into the river. They can afford to clean up messes when messes happen. Poor people in centrally planned economies can't afford that. They're struggling to survive. They don't care if somebody's going to dump something in the river or somebody's going to chop down a forest or whatever. So it's very clear that following the UN's prescriptions on the environment would lead to an environmental cataclysm. The same is true, as you just pointed out, David, on the coronavirus thing. They're telling us that we need to all stay home, that we need to shut down the economy, and that this is going to keep us healthy. That is so ludicrous. And if you have, two brain cells to rub together, two brain cells on active duty, as I just heard said recently, you realize that this is going to be a catastrophe for public health, right? People are locked in their house. They're not getting vitamin D from the sunshine. They're not interacting with people to benefit their mental health. They're feeling isolated. They're feeling lonely. We found out from Cuomo now that the people getting coronavirus are the ones locked in their house. It's leading to skyrocketing suicide and depression rates because people are losing their jobs and their businesses are going under. I mean, anybody who believes these people, I'm sorry, at this point, you just got to wonder, what's wrong with you? I mean, don't you have any critical thinking skills at all? Can't you see with your eyes what's happening? We have been deceived. And it's almost always, what they tell us is almost always the opposite. If they tell us we need to shut down our economy for our health or to save the environment, you can be sure that's the worst possible thing we could do.
Yeah, well, there could be a vision issue because the masks might be slipping up a little bit, sometimes. And then also, I've heard people have been like suffocating themselves. There was a lady that passed out while she was driving because she wasn't getting enough oxygen because people aren't used to wearing these masks every day, right? Because, we're not China. And this poor woman, passed out, crashed the car. We've seen all this kind of stuff happen. You're not getting enough oxygen to the brain, something like that. And then you have all these doctors coming out, doctor after doctor after doctor after doctor, saying, no, 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 you guys don't understand. We wear masks and we sanitize our environment when we're doing surgery and stuff like that. You don't have to wear masks like that. This is not even going to help you. I remember from the day one of this outbreak, when it started happening, they were saying, this thing is so airborne and virulent. You can get it through your eyeballs. You can get it through your skin. You can get it through your hair follicles. And I'm like, oh, but a mask is going to be the symbol of this movement. And in a weird way, I can't help but think, with all the censorship going on, that if we look at this in a way, if we just kind of expand our horizons for a sec and we look at this like it's like a global religion that's being started, a global cult. We saw this with when you're relating it to the climate thing, we saw this with the Extinction Rebellion movement, where you had all these very cult-like weird seances happening in the streets all over the world. And then this is the same thing, where now the symbol of whether or not you're in this religion or not is to basically wear a muzzle. Like that, to me, that's what it looks like. Muzzle yourself. Don't say anything against the World Health Organization or you will be banished and hung from the crosses. Like this is how it's starting to get. It's ridiculous.
It is. And I think cult is actually a really good description to describe what we're talking about here. I mean, these are people who evidence has absolutely no effect on them. You know, the climate cult was really obviously a cult. In fact, some of the world's leading experts on climate talked about this. You had Dr. Richard Lindzen, a meteorology professor at MIT, said these people are literally a cult, right? They are a cult. They are immune to evidence, right? You can present all the evidence in the world showing them that their beliefs are wrong, and it won't make a bit of difference to them. They'll come up with some cult-like excuse for why it's not. It's very much like the Jim Jones cult, right? It's very dangerous too. We had Dr. Roy Spencer, senior climatologist for NASA. Now he works at the University of Alabama at Huntsville, running their global satellite program to keep track of the Earth's temperature. He says he calls them climate Nazis, right? I mean, Nazism was just a big giant cult, the cult of occult national socialism. And he's exactly right. These people, their religion is that there's too many people, that we hate freedom, that we need to, I mean, it's very similar to Plato. We'll be the philosopher kings. We'll tell you what vaccines you need. We'll tell you what you can watch. We'll tell you what you can think. We'll tell you what kind of goofy thing you can wear on your face and when you have to take it off. We'll tell you who's essential and who's not essential. We'll tell you if and when you can go to church. And you basically just submit. And if we think it's time for you to die, then, that's what it's got to be. And you keep digging into this and you realize these people are not just funny. They're not just weird. They're incredibly, incredibly dangerous.
Oh, that much is true. And they just have, in a way, as much as I want to stop them and expose them and wake everybody up, they're doing a fantastic job for me. I really don't have to do much. You just have to sit back and watch them fall on their own sword right now. It's just getting ridiculous. But you wrote an article, I think it was, you published this, was this today or this week?
Yeah, that was today.
Green globalists exploit coronavirus to advance climate agenda. Did you want to break this down a little bit for people?
Yeah, sure. And so what I did basically in this article was just showed that every element of deep state power, and I mean the head of the UN, Antonio Guterres, the socialist, the Hollyweird celebrities, right? You had Madonna and Robert De Niro signing a big open letter about we need radical transformation of the world and we can never go back to how we were before and blah, blah, blah. You have the governments of the world, even in the UK, the so-called conservative government saying the same thing. We're going to rebuild and it's going to be all green, right? And it's important to remember when they talk about green, there's a reason why we call them watermelons, right? Because they're green on the outside. They pretend to care about the environment, but really they're red on the inside. They just want totalitarian control over our lives and over the economy. So all of these different forces, the fake media, the fake celebrities, the fake scientists, the fake, UN world leaders, all of them are pushing in the same direction. We even have governors right close to you guys in Canada, Governor Inslee up in Washington State, saying the same thing. Oh, we're going to fight coronavirus and climate change at the same time using the same tools. So what they've done, and we've written extensively on how the deep state is exploiting this coronavirus, David. We actually put out a special report in the New American Magazine, an entire issue of the magazine. It's available for free. You don't even have to be a subscriber. You can get the PDF version of it for free online, where we break this down. What they're doing on the economic front. They're now trying to move us toward a global currency run by the International Monetary Fund. They're trying to mandate global force vaccines with a global tracking system with a global biometric ID, all funded by the Rockefeller Foundation and the Gates Foundation. They're trying to move us toward total surveillance, right, where every move you make would be tracked under the guise of keeping us safe from coronavirus or terrorism or pick your thing. All of this is happening now, and it's so obvious, it's so clear. And so, Robert Welch used to say, he was the founder of a grassroots organization in America called the John Birch Society. He used to say that as we get closer to the end game, these people are going to be doing the equivalent of running through the streets naked toward the finish line. And I think that's where we are now. I mean, these people, these globalist technocrats are running through the streets naked. Everybody who has a brain to think can look at this and say, oh my goodness, that's what they're doing. And so now we're down to the wire. Either these people are going to be exposed and stopped, or they're going to win and it's not going to be nice. And I have a feeling they're not going to win. So,
well, not while you and I are around and many others. As long as I have breath in my body, I'm going to be on this show doing this, whether I'm censored or not. We're going to keep doing this. We've been talking about the solutions to this. People are getting freaked out. And so what I've been trying to do is help give people a message of personal empowerment and getting back with the family and back with the community and learning who your friends are and sharing information. And not in a way where you're trying to force people to take on your ideology. That's not what this is about. See, people like us, you know, we believe in freedom. So the idea is to, that we kind of have to sell you on it. This is an exchange of ideas. You know, the truth is earned through debate and discussion and free speech. That's how it's earned. And what I'm said is, hey, if they want to censor somebody like me, whatever, but why are they censoring other experts that came from their own cloth? I mean, have there been many cases throughout your research, because you've been researching these types of things for a long time, have there been other cases where people from within these organizations like the WHO, the UN, the different organizations, have they come out? Have there been whistleblowers that have come out over the years to try to tell people, hey, this really isn't the right scientific model, or this really isn't a glowing, benevolent organization? Has there been whistleblowers over the years?
Oh my goodness, there's been so many of them, David, and I'm so glad you asked. And what happens is every time one of them turns and starts exposing the truth is they try to destroy them, they try to discredit them, and if that doesn't work, they actually kill them. You know, within the UN, I actually have a huge network of sources within the UN, and it drives the UN's leadership totally crazy, but it is what it is. But, you know, if you go all the way back to the beginning of the UN, there was a guy, and we wrote about this in the New American, I really encourage people to go read this article. His name was Pavel Bang Jensen. He was a Danish diplomat. He had been part of the anti-Nazi resistance to the Nazi Germans in Denmark. And, you know, the UN leadership, many of them were actual Nazis, right? Kurt Waldheim, who ended up the Secretary General of the UN, was an actual Nazi, right? Okay, actual stormtrooper with the SS for the Nazis. So he started blowing the whistle. He said, oh my goodness, guys, this UN thing is totally controlled by Soviet agents. It's controlled by communists. And he was working in these hearings where they were investigating what the Soviet Union had done in Hungary. And they had given the guarantee that when the witnesses came forward, their identities would be kept anonymous because they knew that the communist terror regime would take their families and torture them and slaughter them if they knew who it was that was speaking out. And so the UN promised these people anonymity. You can come and testify. You can come give the UN evidence so we can investigate what's going on there, and we will keep quiet about your real identity. Only we will know it. Well, what they found out was that high-ranking Soviet agents within the UN were passing the names of these people over to the Soviet government. And so their families were being disappeared, tortured, killed, etc. And Pavel Bang Jensen started blowing the whistle, and he started saying, hey, this UN is totally controlled by Soviets. They're killing people. This is terrible. And he committed suicide after relentless persecution by the UN. They tried to call him crazy, and then finally they just suicided him in what was so obviously a staged suicide. And unfortunately, the track record hasn't gotten any better until today. I know whistleblowers. Some of this is out in public. Take Anders Kumpis as one example. Swedish human rights worker in the UN human rights bureaucracy. And he became very alarmed because UN peace troops were running around Africa raping children. And so he was getting the reports, you know, these UN peace troops with the goofy blue helmets were raping children, kidnapping children, selling them into sex slavery. I mean, this was a systematic thing going on with high-ranking officers involved. It wasn't just, you know, some rogue lunatics. And so he said, hey, you guys, we got to do something about this. And I said, oh, just shush, you know, be quiet. So he said, okay, well, I got to do something. So he became a whistleblower, not by choice. He just knew something had to be done because children were being raped by UN soldiers. So he passed that information on to French prosecutors, hoping they could do something. And you would think, hey, let's give this guy a medal, right? Protecting children from being raped by UN peace troops. Now that is a heroic action, or, you know, at least something that a common, decent person would do. Right. Well, instead, they fired him. They smeared him in the media. They marched him out of his office under armed guard. And they had a secret meeting in turn in Italy. All the leadership of the UN came together. We ended up getting the leaked documents. And they plotted on how can we destroy this guy? How can we ruin his credibility? So that was a big wake-up call to a lot of people. There's another one I interviewed not too long ago. Her name is Emma Riley, also working for the UN human rights machine. She found out that Chinese dissidents who were testifying at the UN, who were trying to get help from the UN because the mass murdering communist Chinese dictatorship was using its terror apparatus to destroy, torture, kill, etc. She found out somebody in the UN at a high level was passing the names of these dissidents back to China so that their families could be tortured, so that they could be prevented from leaving China to provide evidence to the UN. So what happened to her? She got a medal. No, of course not, right? They smeared her, destroyed her career, got rid of her. Now she's going through the appeals process, but this is what happens to whistleblowers. And so that's why so few people are willing to go public with these things, because they know their job will be destroyed, their career will be destroyed, their reputation will be destroyed. But there are so many of these. We've covered it very, very extensively. And, you know, the same thing is true in the scientific community. You know, the UN, I'll give you another example. Niels Axel Mörner, he's one of the world's top geophysicists, if not the world's leading expert on sea levels. He was the lead reviewer on the UN IPCC's sea level section for their global warming reports. And he said, guys, this is all wrong. The seas are not rising. I've been monitoring this for 50 years. He was the head of the geophysics and geodynamics department at Stockholm University. And they loved him before he started blowing the whistle on this. He said, this is all wrong, guys. You can't put out this report. It's just wrong. We're not going to drown. In fact, if anything, the ocean is going down in most places. And, you know, we're not going to do this. Well, they said, oh, now he's a quack. You can't believe him. He's a conspiracy theorist. He's a kook. The same people who put him on to be a lead reviewer. And so I did a 30-minute interview with him in Stockholm. You can see that on YouTube. Really? It's been seen more than 100,000 times. But there's so many examples like this, David. I could go on forever.
Wow. Wow. So, guys, can you hear that? And don't just listen to what Alex said. Go research it. Go look into it. We're not just talking out of our ass here. And that, when I'm saying you're trusting known liars and criminals right now, we're not just talking about a couple petty slaps on the wrist with a little bit of fraud and a little bit of taking a little thing. No, this is, so this weaves into the global trafficking networks as well. And I wanted to ask you about this, Alex, because I know you've been behind the scenes on that discussion. You've been talking about that stuff. This is pretty dark material for people, but I had last night I did a live stream. It was probably one of the best streams I've done in a long time with a gentleman who was, he's a Hollywood producer. He used to work in the banking industry, and he came out and started talking about the whole Pizzagate thing, the stuff going on in Hollywood. We were highlighting some of the elements of that new documentary, Out of Shadows. I don't know if you've seen it, but basically, right. And so I wanted to get your take on that, because you've come at this from a research perspective with some of these organizations. And a lot of people are not aware about what types of organizations are involved in the trafficking of children. And I feel like, to me, that must be the most evil thing that exists on this planet. There's a lot of evil things we could talk about. But for me, innocent children being taken in numbers of 2 to 5 million per year and brought into this brutal, brutal underground network, and not with just a bunch of low-level ragtag criminal mafia gangs. We're talking about elite structures of power globally. Do you have any comments on that?
Yeah, I think it's one of the most important problems facing humanity today. Like you said, it is the most evil single thing you can think of. I mean, it's worse than murder. It's worse than mass murder, taking innocent little children and harming them in this way. And unfortunately, what we've seen, the tip of the iceberg is already visible now. I mean, Jeffrey Epstein kind of brought a lot of this out to light, right? This guy was convicted for child prostitution. This guy was involved in child trafficking. This guy was flying people like Bill Clinton to his pervert sex island in the Caribbean, right? He, on his Lolita Express, where they would rape children. And then, of course, he didn't commit suicide. They killed him to make sure he wouldn't reveal anything. But this guy knew all of it, right? I mean, it's so sick, it boggles the mind. Bill Gates, of course, was a close associate of Jeffrey Epstein. He flew around on his private jets. He went to his house, right? These guys were buddy buddies. He made huge donations at the recommendation of Jeffrey Epstein. So all these elitists are involved in this. And the stuff keeps popping up over and over again, right? In Sweden, they found out that the Child Protection Services was trafficking the children into a sex ring. And they found out that at least two Swedish prime ministers were involved in this pedophilia scandal. In the United Kingdom, when Jimmy Savile, the BBC presenter, got busted raping hundreds of children in satanic sex rituals, they did some investigations. They found out that this went all the way up into Parliament, all the way up into number 10, and I mean, just completely through the elites of society. We found out, you know, some of these princes in the British crown were involved with Jeffrey Epstein, right? Prince Andrew. What in the world is going on? We had a Dr. Phil, who's got one of the most popular TV programs in America, invited a girl on his show, said everything had been vetted with law enforcement. And what she said, I encourage people to go back and watch this. I wrote about it in the New American. She said, you know, from the time she was little, her parents had sold her into this, and she had been raped repeatedly over and over again from as early as she could remember. And then she said, when she finally got out and started watching television, she said the people who were doing the raping, the people who were abusing her and the other children, were judges and senior law enforcement people and politicians and celebrities, right? So she saw her or the people who were victimizing her on television. So, and this is just the tip of the iceberg, right? This is such an enormous problem. And I think it's one of the most urgent things for humanity to deal with. And I think it's actually one of the reasons why they're promoting this thing about deep fakes now, right? They know that a lot of this evidence is out there. In fact, Andrew Breitbart, a journalist who was murdered, supposedly died of a heart attack, right? If you believe that, I got another bridge to sell you. He was talking about exposing some stuff involving Obama. He had video, right? Mm. So a lot of this is out there. It goes very, very deep. And it's one of those things that the elites would do absolutely anything to keep under wraps. I mean, they'll kill as many people as necessary to make sure they don't get busted on this, because it would bring down everything. They would probably all end up either in front of the firing squad or in prison for life, and not a person on this planet would feel one bit of sympathy for them, and it would blow up their whole little New World Order agenda. So they have got to conceal this, but it's all right there for anybody who wants to see it.
Wow, it's shocking. I've even been checking out, do you know Tim Ballard? I think his name's Tim Ballard.
So
there's a documentary, there's a movie coming out with Jim Caviezel. I think Mel Gibson's a part of it as well. And Jim Caviezel's playing the role of this Tim Ballard guy who was a former, like he was former police officer, intelligence officer in the U.S. And he got kind of exposed to some of the stuff going on in Haiti with this trafficking stuff. And the whole movie is going to be about his awakening and him going to look for this child and then finding that there's a whole friggin' rabbit hole there. And now this guy literally goes out with mercenaries and people that are ex-Navy SEALs and stuff, and they go around the world and they actually try to penetrate into at least the lower levels of these networks. And so there's a 6-part documentary series that people can find. I'll have to try to find the link, but it's just,
oh, that's awesome.
So it's just, it's coming out more and more. What's interesting to me is, like, this is a movie that's coming out with Jim Caviezel and a bunch of stars, and nobody in the media is talking about it. A lot of people don't even know this movie's coming out, and because it's about this subject. And it seems to be that this subject, as you said, is the real, real hot button. It's the weak point. And as much as we want to expose all the other things, think about it. If you can take them down on this front, everything else starts to make sense. It's so much easier to communicate to people, yeah, these people are not to be trusted, literally.
Yeah, and that's what we're seeing. And John Podesta, I think we really need some explanations about the content that was in those emails that WikiLeaks released. We really need to know, what are all these references to pizza and hot dogs and little children and pool parties and spirit cooking? Let's talk about spirit cooking. What do you guys do when you're spirit cooking, right? Why don't we bring in Marina Abramović to talk about it? I went to the UN Climate Summit in Madrid. They had a big section there in the public area with artwork, so-called, from Marina Abramović.
Really?
Why is it? Oh, yeah. We took some shots of it and put them up on Twitter. These people are sick in the head. And that's what I mean, right? I think even in some segments of the conservative movement in America, there's this incredibly naive idea that we're just dealing with people who have bad ideas. And if we could just show them the wisdom of, and the superiority of our ideas, then everything would be fine. No, there is an element to that, especially with, the useful idiots, as Lenin would call them. But once you get to the top of the pyramid, these aren't people with bad ideas. These are freaking evil people. These are people who are just wicked, whose hearts are just absolutely desperately evil, who just love to perpetrate evil. They are psychopaths. They are sick in the head. And, there's no reasoning with them, right? We can't just explain to them, hey, guys, it's really bad to hurt children like that. You really probably shouldn't do that. I mean, what are they going to say? No, we'll kill you, right? They're just absolutely evil, absolutely sick. And I think that is really fundamental to understanding this. If you don't understand that we're dealing with evil, I think it's hard to kind of wrap your mind around this battle and this struggle and realize that there's really only two sides. Either you're with the evil or you're with the good, and you get to pick, but that's your choice.
It's true. I actually posted a quote from David Berkowitz. Anybody remember who David Berkowitz is? He was the son of Sam Killer, and there was some interesting interviews that he did in prison. And it turns out, like, in prison, there's some people that believe that he was trying he had a crisis of conscience or something, and he was trying to talk about what he went through, ritualistic abuse as a child. He was brought into these satanic networks, and then, this is how he became who he was. And there's some pretty good books on it, but there's a quote that he had about this. He says that Satanists are peculiar people. They aren't ignorant peasants or semi-literate natives. Rather, their ranks are filled with doctors, lawyers, businessmen, and basically highly responsible citizens. They are not a careless group who are apt to make mistakes, but they are secretive and bonded together by a common need and desire to mete out havoc on society. And I think that that is so far removed from the average person's mind about how they could how this could possibly exist. This is so far away from them. Because do you agree that the way that evil operates, Alex, is that it plays on your virtue. It plays on your compassion. It plays on your empathy. It plays on all those good qualities. But what it does is it relies on naivety and it relies on ignorance. Would you agree with that?
He took the words right out of my mouth. I mean, that's exactly what it is. And they, you know, Hitler exploited this psychological vulnerability as well, right? They know that people like to be, you know, part of the crowd. They don't want to stand out. They don't want to, you know, be alone. They don't want to be seen as fringe or kook. So they just kind of want to go along with the mainstream. And as long as people are watching television and they think that that is what other people think, they'll be apt to go along with that. And there's also another psychological vulnerability. You know, your normal person may have evil, I mean, does have evil within them, right? They might, you know, steal a little bit or, you know, cheat on their tax or, you know, lie about this or that. But, you know, they can't comprehend the depths of the evil that we're dealing with because they wouldn't do that, right? Your average person, they just want to feed their family and go to work and, you know, maybe have some nice entertainment and relax and drink a beer at night, right? They don't have these ideas of like, hey, I want to hurt children. I want to rule the world. I want to be a trillionaire by robbing everybody. Yeah, so that's just kind of incomprehensible to them because it's just so far beyond the little evil that they're willing to, you know, little, relatively speaking, that they're willing to do, that they just can't imagine that there are people who would massacre millions of people or who would hurt and abuse and sexually torture little children. But once you realize, I mean, it shouldn't be a controversial point. All you got to do is look through history, right? Mao, Hitler, Stalin, Lenin, Pol Pot, you know, the list could go on forever, right? Of mass murderers, of maniacs who have risen to positions of power. So once you realize that there is at least some segment of the population, how big it is, who knows, but it's at least some segment of the population anywhere that is absolutely depraved beyond anything we can imagine. And you see this phenomenon that they all gravitate toward the institutions of power and towards the institutions of control. Once you realize that, it should be very, very obvious what we're dealing with. But the average person, I think, struggles to understand that because it's so outside of, you know, their frame of reference, their you know, everyday existence. And so that's a big challenge. But I think more and more people are waking up, David, and I think that's very, very encouraging.
It is, and I feel it too. Like even people that I thought would never even entertain any of the subjects that I talk about on my show have been contacting me and be like, man, I think this is right. There's something else happening here at this stage of the game. It's so blatantly obvious. It boggles my mind how people are still locked in that prison, but that's how propaganda works. It's been designed to work that way. I actually just posted something on my Instagram page from Bernays. I'll just pull it up really quick because it's such a good quote to highlight where we're at and what they're doing and how they work. He's talking here about the psychology of public relations. And he says, the systematic study of mass psychology revealed to students the potentialities of invisible government of society by manipulation of the motives which actuate man in the group. Established that the group has mental characteristics distinct from those of the individual and is motivated by impulses and emotions which cannot be explained in the basis of what we know of individual psychology. So the question naturally arose, if we understand the mechanism and motives of the group mind, is it not possible to control and regiment the masses according to our will without their knowing about it? Pretty sure they have this manual on their desk, these people.
Yep. And they're masters of it. You know, they've been figuring this stuff out for over 100 years now. If you look at some of the stuff that the Soviets were doing, you know, they became masters at mind control, manipulation of the human mind, the human psyche, using propaganda. They became masters of creating controlled opposition, right? So, you can be opposed to the system, but you just have to follow this guy. He's the leader. Anybody else, then you're a kook. But this guy, that's okay. You can be legitimate opposition. And then we'll still talk about you in the New York Times and the Washington Compost. They're very, very good at this now. You know, my passion for a long time has been exploring how this begins in education. We talked about this a little bit the last time I was on your show, David. You know, it really starts with training up these children and handicapping these children when they're in school on a massive scale through the public education system. So that's been one of my passions. We did this special report here. And, you know, this brainwashing in the schools, this indoctrination, this sexualization, this dumbing down of the children is what makes it possible for the propaganda to work later in life. Because if these children were trained and taught how to think, right? How to reason, how to use logic, how to create a proper argument, how to sort evidence, how to establish truth, they wouldn't be vulnerable to this kind of manipulation. They'd turn on CNN and they would laugh, right? Like, right. You expect me to believe that? I mean, how stupid do you think we
murder
are?
Murder hornets?
But because, right, murder hornets. But because they've been able to successfully indoctrinate and dumb down such a significant percentage of the population, not just in the United States, worldwide, right? Bill Gates played a key role in this, signed a deal with UNESCO, the UN's education agency that was literally run by a communist, Irina Bokova, who they wanted to promote to UN Secretary General. I mean, they've become so good at brainwashing the kids and then manipulating the adults with propaganda that, you know, they do have a significant segment of the global population. Now, I would love to know what it is. You know, you obviously can't trust their polls. Their polls told us it was a 98.2% chance that Hillary Clinton was going to become the president. And last time I checked, President Trump is still the president. So we know their polls are absolutely phony. You know, they want us to think that, oh, you're just a fringe. You're just a minority. I don't think we are. In fact, I think the average person today is starting to get some understanding of this. They're starting to recognize that they've been lied to. But certainly there is a big segment of the population that is susceptible to this. And the challenge is now going to be, how do we reach those people? How do we reach people who think with their emotions? How do we reach people who are just so conditioned, like Pavlov's dogs? You know, they hear something that doesn't fit with the worldview that was instilled in them. So they say, yeah, I don't want to hear that. You're a poo-poo head. You know, don't tell me that. You know, how do we reach those types of people? And that's something that we really need to work on.
Well, I think we're getting better at it. And the more they censor us, the more people are going to be like, yeah, why are they censoring them? So keep censoring us. It's doing a beautiful job of bringing you down. The last thing I wanted to get into with you really quickly here, Alex, is recently in Canada, Prime Minister Trudeau, after he was showing his different socks to the world on live television, because that's really important news, he basically just randomly built an executive order system and took power that he doesn't actually have and said, effective immediately, we're banning 1,500 firearms from the Canadian public. Law-abiding citizens are now turned into criminals. And here's the randomized list of random guns that we're going to be taking off the list. And then a couple days after, Bill Blair, who's now one of the ministers under Trudeau, started saying, no, we got to get rid of 10 gauge and 12 gauge shotguns and certain hunting rifles because they're dangerous as well. And they did this off the precedent of a shooting event that happened in Halifax, which is horrible. And there are some interesting questions about that event, but we'll save that. And the thing about this case is that shooter was A, mentally deranged, clearly, and B, he obtained these firearms that he used in the shooting illegally. So once again, we have a situation with a shooter that he uses illegal firearms. He uses them obviously in an illegal and irresponsible way, to say it mildly. And then the media comes around and the government comes around and goes, see, this is why we have to get rid of guns. And the public stops the argument there in their head. Coming from the US, from an American system, the idea of, you know, Second Amendment, what would you have to say to Canadians right now about this?
Never give up your guns. Ever, under any circumstances, never give up your guns. You know, Trudeau sounds a lot to me like, I don't know, Fidel Castro or something. Right? Oh, I'm the one man dictator and I say you can't have guns, you can't have guns. That's crazy talk. This is not how civilized societies work. This is not how free people live. We don't have dictators. We don't take orders from one guy. And even beyond that, you know, in America, we've always had this understanding, even before we were a nation, that guns are an inseparable part of freedom. Right? Guns are what enforce your freedom. Without guns, you become a slave. You become a serf. The people need to be the ones who retain ultimate authority. And the only way to ultimately retain authority is to maintain force. And that doesn't mean that I think people need to, you know, go uprising against the government or anything like that. Just that check on their power is so important. And I really like the American tradition. You know, our founding fathers, the British came over 1774, 1770, 1775. Like, hey, you guys need to give up your guns. And you know what? Our forefathers said, yeah, come and take them. Okay. And it didn't work out well for them. Most powerful military in the world. They thought they were going to crush us and they got their butts handed to them. Under no circumstances should anyone hand in their guns. Guns are an integral part of freedom. Here in America, we believe that God gave us the right to keep and bear arms. Therefore, government has no ability to infringe on that right in a legitimate manner. In fact, our view here in America, our founding fathers said, Government exists to protect our rights. And whenever government becomes destructive to those ends, we need to seriously start thinking about changing or rearranging that government, because it has lost its legitimacy. It is not doing what it is supposed to do, which is protect us from evil. We know what evil is, murder, rape, things like that, and protect our rights. And so when they're not doing that, they lose their legitimacy. And I'm afraid this petty tyrant you guys are dealing with up in Canada, Mr. Trudeau, needs to be taught a lesson. And the people of Canada need to say absolutely, positively not. We're not giving you our guns. End of discussion. We're not going to debate it. We're not going to discuss it. We're just not giving you our guns, period.
Well, and we should do that. We're keeping it without debate, because he took them away without debate. And now Canadian people are starting to wake up, Alex. The petition, there's now like, I don't know how, 16 different petitions. One of the petition websites actually crashed for 3 days because that many people were trying to sign the damn thing. Even people who are not firearm owners that just realize that this is a precedent of totalitarianism in this country. How more underhanded could you get, that you've got everybody locked in their homes so they can't go out and protest? You can't have mass gatherings now because we've got to maintain that social distancing and keep off the murder hornets. Yeah, exactly. And then also, he shut down Parliament as well, so it's very minimized, so there's no debate from the other political parties in Canada to this, which, so think about it, he just went, yep, executive order, we're doing this effective immediately, there's nothing you could do about it. I don't know how much more evidence the Canadian people need to see that this guy is the wrong guy for the job, at the very least, and at the very most, he possibly should be in prison at this point, because this is just getting out of hand. Sorry, but that's just how I feel.
I agree with you. I agree with you, David. When leaders start infringing on the most sacred and fundamental rights of the individual, they stop being leaders. They abdicate any sense of legitimacy that they may have had. And I do have some good news for you guys. I know we're just about out of time, but they tried this in Connecticut. They tried to force everybody to register their semi-automatic scary guns, and people said no. And they tried it in New York, and people said no. And in fact, they have now sparked a real problem for themselves, because now sheriffs and state legislatures all across the country are realizing, hey, we have power too. And if we're told to confiscate people's guns, we're actually going to arrest the people telling us to confiscate people's guns, because that's a totally illegitimate order. We established at Nuremberg that following orders is not, I repeat, is not a defense for committing human rights violations, and disarming innocent law-abiding citizens is a major human rights violation. There's no excuse. If you come to take people's guns, you might as well be coming to take their free speech or their life. You have no right to do it. You must be resisted. And don't worry, guys, in Canada, we've got your back here in America. So God bless.
Well, thank you. Yes, thank you. We need it. We need somebody to watch our back there, because, you know, it's just, we know what? In Canada, we've been so apathetic for so long, because I guess we've had it good for so long. The culture here in Canada has always been very much like, you know, we love the royal family, we love our history and all that. But yet nobody really has been inspired until this point to have any incentive to fight against the government. You know, like there's only been a few that have risen up to fight certain laws, on speech laws and other laws. But now it seems like everybody has a common cause where it's not even just about the guns. If you think they're stopping at guns, that's just where they're starting. They're going to keep going. And maybe you could say something about that, Alex, as a warning from the past. Isn't there a sort of blueprint that a lot of these dictators take when they come into power? There's a blueprint for how they slowly do this incremental stealing of your rights before they start doing all the other stuff. Am I off on that? Is there a blueprint we can study?
Right on the money, right on the money. And we've seen this from every dictatorial regime in the 20th century, right? Before they start taking the real, you know, power grabs, before they really start unleashing the brutality and the mass murder, they always take the guns. And so that ought to be a powerful wake-up call to us. And even in the countries where it hasn't gone directly from gun control and gun registration to outright mass murder and things like that, what you see is an explosion in violent crime. You see an explosion in rape, an explosion in robbery. People commit suicide in different ways, but it doesn't actually stop any of these problems. And so gun control is counterproductive on every front, and it's incredibly dangerous. You know, look at the history, look at the numbers. Hitler, Stalin, Mao, Pol Pot, all of these guys went for the guns before they started the mass murder. Under no circumstances should people ever give up their firearms, ever. And that applies whether you're a Canadian or whether you're an American or whether you're a Jamaican or whether you're a Chinese. You free people must never give up their guns.
Well, and one more example to highlight that is if you look at the UK, where they had these firearm bans, Then they started seeing a rise in knife attacks and mugging attacks and acid attacks and other ways that people like to kill each other. So now they're trying to literally ban knives. So, and I just looked up some statistics about how many people actually kill each other with things like forks and weird stuff that you wouldn't think about. And you're like, what are they going to ban every possible tool? Are they just going to, they want to wrap us in bubble wrap, keep us locked in our homes, no access to anything at all that could be dangerous. And it's all going to be under the guise of it's for your protection. That seems to be the number one thing. Maybe this is a good point to finish on. Who was it that said that you can't have both security and freedom simultaneously? And I don't even think we're talking about security. I think we're talking about the illusion of security in exchange for all your freedom. Am I right about that?
That's exactly what it is. And that was a common sentiment among our founders, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson. And you're right. Gun control will not bring any additional security. How do I know? Because I've seen it, right? I grew up in a lot of different countries. I spent more time living in Mexico than any other place, 7 years in Mexico. And guess what? In Mexico, there is a total ban on civilian ownership of firearms. Guess what else? In Mexico, you are thousands of percent more likely to be murdered than you are in the most gun-infested areas of the United States, right? Plano, Texas has one of the highest gun ownership rates per capita in the United States and also one of the lowest murder rates per capita. I also spent 4 years living in Switzerland where every home, literally every home, has a machine gun. When you turn 18, their government's idea of gun control is, here's your machine gun, here's some ammo, you better make sure you know how to use it in case Nazis invade, right?
Right.
And guess what? They have one of the lowest murder rates in the world. Venezuela, with help from the UN, disarmed their slaves, and then crime and murder went through the roof. There is no additional safety that comes from gun control. In fact, you lose your safety and you lose your freedom.
Well, let's do closing comments on this, Alex. We kind of have to do the sales pitch for freedom today because every time I say freedom, people are like, So why is, I know this sounds obvious, but we got to ask it. Why is freedom such an important thing to defend?
Well, for one, because it allows us to control our own lives and our own decisions. And, you know, if you're not free to do what you want to do, obviously respecting the rights of others, then you're a slave. And a slave is no way to live, right? Freedom, I think, is one of the most important values. It's also, I think, God, and I know you're not a religious person, David, but I think it's God's design for mankind. You know, God said we have a right to life. God said we have a right to property. God said we have a right to liberty. And I think all those things are fundamental. We need to protect them. You know, there's some things that are worth more than life itself. And I would say liberty is one of those. I would rather live, you know, the state motto of the state of New Hampshire, which is not far from you guys up in Canada, is live free or die. And the reason the people of New Hampshire decided on that as their state motto, and that was a very common saying during the War for Independence era, is because liberty is more valuable than life itself. Is life worth living if you're going to be a slave, if you're going to spend all day, every day doing what somebody else tells you to do for their benefit? And I would say, no, it's not. So we must protect freedom. And even the people who don't appreciate freedom for freedom's sake, you know, I feel sorry for you, but I can guarantee you appreciate the fruits of freedom, right? Prosperity, right? The fact that we have every kind of good and service we can imagine. We have all the food that we need. We all have homes. We have heating and electricity and light bulbs. The reason for that is because of our freedom. The reason we have peace and security is because of our freedom. As we lose freedom, we see tyranny, mass death, starvation, shortages, right? Just look around the world, folks. Look at history. It's so clear. Freedom is better than tyranny on every possible front. Don't be a fool. Don't give it up. Your forefathers put their lives on the line so that you could be free today. Don't give it up.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And I actually do agree with you. I have my own personal relationship with what you would call God. But, and I do believe that that's where our rights come from. Our rights are not given to us by any kind of government, any kind of person, and no type of government or person can take those rights away from you. And I also agree with you on the point that freedom, it doesn't mean total freedom to the point where you can just go into somebody's house and take what they want or just go randomly start shooting people. That's not what we're talking about. Freedom is about also understanding that because I have freedom, I recognize that you also have freedom and I respect you and I have value for my life. So I am capable of seeing that you also have value in your life and I value your life. So I'm not going to cause you any harm. So this is the idea of freedom, is that it's a symbiotic relationship with the society that surrounds you, the community that surrounds you, the family that surrounds you. And so I'm 100% behind you on that, Alex, and I appreciate you sharing that. I appreciate you spending this time with me, my friend. Have you got any other articles coming up, any events you're going to? Well, I guess maybe not. It's all live streamed these days. Do you have anything that you want to let people know about?
Yeah, so I do have a big article coming out soon on Bill Gates. It'll be a big in-depth
Nice.
investigative report. It'll be in the next issue of the New American Magazine. If you don't subscribe yet, go to thenewamerican.com. You can get a subscription. It's, you know, cheaper than a cup of coffee a month. So go get a subscription. You can also subscribe for free to our online thing. You know, we'll get in your emails. You'll get the six most important stories that we publish each day. Go sign up. You know, you want to bypass the media. You don't want to have to rely on Facebook's algorithms or YouTube's algorithms to find out the truth. So just go to the New American.com, sign up. If you want to follow me on social media, it's AlexNewman_JOU on Twitter, AlexJNewman86 on Facebook. And thank you so much for having me on, David. It's always such a pleasure. You do such great work. I really, really appreciate it. To all the friends and wonderful liberty-loving people of Canada, thank you for watching. Please help get this message out. Share this with people because,
yes,
you know, the big tech companies won't allow it to get out there on its own. And thanks again for having me, David. It's really a pleasure.
Oh, I always love talking to you, Alex. We'll do it again sometime. Thanks to everybody in the chat. Love you guys. Live free. And we'll catch you soon here again on Way of the Truth Warrior. Cheers, everyone.